Hi everybody, we're back. We thought we'd give Mickey a break after doing two sessions. So my name is Matthew Rabinowitz, and I'm a technical evangelist here at Microsoft. And I'm going to talk to you a bit today about marketing and monetization of your apps. So, you know, based on kind of the previous sessions, you've already got your design, you've developed your app, you've tested it, and now you've got it in the store. So how do you market this thing, and how do you make money out of it, and how do you get user feedback on your app? There we go. Sorry, technical difficulties. There we go. So what are we going to talk about today? We're going to first talk a bit about monetization options. So how do you make money on your app, first of all, and what are the options around that? Then we're going to talk a bit about extending the reach in your app. How do I get my app out to more people around the world so that more people pay for my app and I make more money? And then we're going to talk a bit about using reviews to drive uptake. How do I make sure I get positive reviews and so people see that and want to download my app from the store? And also, how do we deal with user issues? So user issues can be a major concern and can result in negative reviews. So how do we avoid those, and how do we give a great experience to the users? And finally, we'll talk a bit about creating a buzz and a story around your app. So we basically have three business models for apps: paid, in-app purchases, and mobile ads. So I'll talk a bit about paid first. So paid apps sound like a great option, because a lot of a paid app is basically, I have an app, I put it in the store, and somebody pays for it. It's the simplest option because it really doesn't require me to write any code. The store takes care of it all. And it sounds like a great option because the developer gets paid the revenue share from the app, easy enough. We currently give, the Windows Store currently gives the developer 70% of all app purchase prices. So this is, again, this is the simplest form of app monetization because I don't have to actually do any work to have it done. But the one problem with it, potentially, is that it's not necessarily ideal, because how many times have you looked at an app where you see the price at $2.99 and you go, I'm not sure if I want to download this, it's kind of a lot of money, etc. So these users sometimes will think twice before purchasing the app, especially when it's not distributed by like a known publisher, or it's new in the store, or it hasn't got a large number of reviews. So to help overcome this problem, the store supports what we call a trial mode. And the trial mode enables the end user to get the app for free, try it out, and then finally buy it. Paid apps that have a trial mode usually get a higher payout rate than the ones without a trial, because the friction to downloading and using the app isn't there. So people are more likely to download your app. So in order to implement the a trial in your app, you have to handle a special app state that we call, and in order to do that, Windows Phone, the phone store supplies an API called, exposes an is trial member of the license information class. So it's a special class that you have access to as a developer. And this way you can check whether the app's running in trial mode or not, and then provide like a slightly different experience based on what's kind of relevant to your app. Generally, there are two types of trials. So the first one is time limited, and the second one is feature limited. Time limited is pretty self-explanatory. Basically, I put my app and I give the user the option to try my app for a period of time, full featured. So generally, they're around 3 to 7 days. And then after that, I can then limit them or force them to purchase the full version before continuing on my app with my app. A feature limited trial, it usually limits kind of app functionality while it's in the trial. For example, if I'm in a trial mode and I have an app that needs to save some file, maybe I don't allow the user to save the file unless they purchase the full version. And as with the limited, with a time limited trial, it's up to you as the developer to decide what is the scope. So there's no set rules around, I'm only gonna allow this and not this. But you have to be careful. The one thing to note about trials is it's really important to find the right balance between what you provide for free in the trial or the duration of the trial in the case of a time-limited one, and the full featured app. You want users to download and use your app, but you don't want to turn them away by limiting it too much. So the next way of monetizing your apps is using in-app purchases. So this is being adopted by more and more developers. And what in-app purchases are is kind of like a freemium model, but it doesn't have to be free. Basically, the app, it's usually free to install, which again kind of reduces that friction to getting people to download it. But then you provide extra or advanced functionality through digital products. In this case, a user can grab the app with, again, without hesitation, and then can generate, and you generate revenue through driving them to purchase new things within the app. So why would you do this? Well, the benefit is you can enjoy more downloads. If your app is $2.99, for instance, and 50% of the people won't download it because it's paid, this way you get people downloading it and then you can upsell them later. But it can be a bit of a double-edged sword. So you really need to kind of plan that in-app purchase strategy. Because on the one hand, you do get more users downloading your app, but on the other hand, they get the app for free, so you may miss out on that initial revenue. Again, there's no rules around this. You have to find that balance between providing enough functionality and providing enough in-app purchase scenarios and foregoing that kind of initial revenue. In fact, you probably have to plan for the time where a lot of people will buy your app and not actually purchase anything. So you have to take that into account. And the in-app purchase process isn't like free. It does require free. It's free from a price perspective, but not free from a work perspective, because it does require some work from an app developer, as it's up to you to kind of write that lap logic to present the associated products and suggest them to the user to make a purchase at the right time. So it also means that the app design has to kind of influence that. You want to drive, especially if you're giving away your app for free, you want to kind of drive people to it. And there again, you have to find the balance. If you're driving people to consciously purchase things in the app, then it can get annoying and people can rate it badly. So you have to find that balance between providing those in-app purchases and giving them some functionality along with it. So when we talk about in-app products, there are basically two types of products. There are durables. Durables are digital items that are purchased once and owned forever. So a good example of that is if I'm playing a game and I download a new level of the game, then that's a durable. A consumable is an item that's consumed. So again, in the game scenario, it's kind of like a digital currency or something like that allows me to upgrade features, those kind of things. I purchase it, I use it, and I have to purchase more to get more functionality. Regardless of whether you choose to use durables or consumables, it's really important to describe that product value and also give users a choice. Again, you want people to download your app, but you don't want them to force them right off the bat to have to buy an in-app purchase in order for the app to be functional. You have to lead them and want them to buy the products. So this is just basically a chart that shows the differences between the different approaches, whether I have paid versus trial and free versus in-app purchases. Keep in mind that a paid app really gives you that initial revenue, but an in-app purchase model actually provides revenue in the longer term, because you may not get that initial revenue, but as the app is utilized, you get more and more revenue from all the goods that people are purchasing from within your app. And that's not to say that these things can't be combined. They're not mutually exclusive. So I could have a paid app with in-app purchases and with a trial as well. You have to be careful. Users will get upset if you charge a good fee for your app and then force them to buy things. So use your discretion based on your scenario and your specific app. So finally, we're going to look at, from a business model, we're going to look a bit at mobile ads. Now, mobile ads is another way of having of monetizing your app by having it ad supported. This approach uses some screen real estate in your app to show ads to users, which then results in payments to the developer from the advertisers themselves. Everyone's seen those little app ads in all sorts of apps, both on phone and Windows 8 and even in websites. So ad-supported apps are generally free to download. Some are charged, but generally it's a good practice to make them free because you are somewhat inconveniencing the user by showing them ads. And this way the user, again, there's no friction to adoption because you're not charging for it. So it sounds like a win-win. Free for the user, I get some money, but one thing you have to keep in mind is that payouts really rely on an ad being seen many times over a long period of time, what we refer to as ad impressions. So an ad-supported model tends to work really well in things like games, because as a user, I've got the game open for an extended period of time. But if I have a weather app, for instance, it may not work as well because I'm only looking at the weather really quickly and then getting out of the app. And one thing to note also, it's also important that the ads are non-intrusive as possible. The one thing you don't want is bad reviews in the store because you've got too many ads or it's too large. A lot of companies provide ad controls for that could be used in our platform, so such as Ad Duplex, Interactive, InMobi, and a bunch of the others. And some work better in some regions than others, depending on the type of ads that are shown. So keep that in mind as well. If you're marketing your app in China, for instance, you want to use one of the ad providers that works well in that region. And you may want to be able to programmatically flip it out based on the current region that the user is in that's using your app. But one thing to note is, again, make them non-intrusive. So there's some things you can do. There's an auto refresh setting that you could use in the ads, the ad controls. And what that does is allows you to control the refresh rate as to how quickly the ads refresh themselves. And obviously you want to find that balance again, because you want it to refresh fast enough where you're getting all these ad impressions and making money. But at the same time, you don't want to refresh them too fast, because if I'm playing a game or in my app and I see an ad refreshing constantly, it does get annoying and it's not a good experience for the user. You can also take advantage of functions such as auto collapse. And auto collapse is a great way of allowing the ad, let's say I have an ad in my app and something happens with a network and the ad doesn't display, and normally you'll see an error message or an X or something like that. So auto collapse allows you to show only a blank box, so it's not intrusive to the user, and then you can actually add logic by trapping that exception and then switch out to another ad provider. So you don't have to use one ad provider in your app. Of course, we've got an ad control, which is we tout as the smart choice, as you can see on the slide. And we say that mainly because it's built around Windows Phone, and it's also compatible with the Windows 8 store app control. So you could use them simultaneously and you could use your PubCenter account. I've got more links on that later on in the slide deck. So we talked a bit about monetization. We talked a bit about how to make money with those methods for your app. Now I want to talk a bit about how we reach more people with your app. How do I broaden my user base of my app? And that's really around localization. So what's localization? Localization is really the product of translating the assets in your app, so for different languages and different regions. And while some markets work well and they're less localization sensitive, so to speak, for instance, if I build my app in Canada here and I market it in the UK, it's not so bad. Everybody speaks English there. There may be some a few date format differences, but for the most part, it's usable. But if I took that same app and marketed it in Asia somewhere, That might be a problem. Obviously, some languages go right to left, some date formats are different, so I really want to be aware. And there's, because of the fact that our store reaches globally, it's really important to think about marketing to those different markets. Now, localization is not a trivial task. So from the least effort to the more effort scenario, we have, at first we have your metadata. So metadata are things like, what's my app description? What are screenshots? What type of keywords? That stuff's fairly simple to localize, because that's doable in the store or your manifest. It's changing a few things and submitting the app based on the user's region. But as we get into more complex, when you start thinking of being locale aware, you start having to think of things like number formats and date formats and currency formats. And that requires some thought and some change in your code behind to make sure that you're checking the user's locale and acting accordingly. And then finally, really complex is when you start thinking about UI. If I have a text-rich app with lots of input boxes and things like that, how do I change those icons, those text, and those graphics easily for every locale? That means I've got to do that in my UI. I've got to take into account not only number formats and sizes, but also, like I said, if you're doing Hebrew or other languages that go right to left, then you really have to start thinking about layouts. And then finally, how do I, like, promoting it in local markets? So how do I get things like badges and those kind of things to translate, that are translated, to promo that in local markets? So it's not a trivial task. And there are resources to help you. So things like Tethys.com and iBabylon.com are great online translating resources that can help you translate things in your app. But again, the onus is on you to kind of get those resources in there. So we have a multilingual toolkit that I'll talk about in a second. So I just want to, before we get into the toolkit, I just want to show that here are the top languages, you know, by percentage in this pie chart of the Windows Phone Store as of last year, some point. And the key takeaway from this is, we do support a lot of languages for Windows Phone, and you can't possibly support them all. So it's really important to think about what are the important languages that you want to target. These are the top ones. Obviously, these are very important. But there are others, depending on if you're marketing to other countries. And just as a bit of trivia here, the average of the top 15 highest grossing apps in the Windows Phone Store support about 8 of them. And I think that's a good overall, and 8's a lot, but I think that's a good number to aim for. Any more and you're probably doing not wasting effort, but it's a lot of effort once you get into more languages. So as I said, localization isn't a trivial process. So we have a toolkit that's an extension for Visual Studio that enables kind of simpler translation workflows. So the toolkit uses an industry standard. It's called the XLIF file format to store the translation. And this format is great because it enables you to send the translations, to export the translation information, send them to a service like iBabylon and Tethys, like I pointed out in the other slide, or to an individual if for any type of professional translation. And then you can then take those translated XLIF files and just integrate them back into the app, and you've got translated resources. So it focuses on a couple things. One is support for what we call pseudo-language translations. Now, pseudo-language, for those who aren't familiar, pseudo-language is kind of like a non-language. It's kind of like gobbledygook. So what it does is it allows me to see, when I'm looking at my app, and we'll show you a quick example shortly, but when I'm looking at my app, it allows me to quickly pinpoint things that are hard-coded. So if I'm working in English, and English is the first language in my resources, it's very hard to tell if that a label is hard-coded or if it's been translated already. So pseudo-language is great because it helps me do that. Also, the toolkit allows me to do things like machine translations. So not everybody wants to pay a service to translate their resources, and nor do you have to. If your app is fairly simple, then you don't have to go out and pay for it all the time. Especially maybe you know somebody who's a native Spanish speaker and you want to support Spanish. So you can actually use our machine translations, which will go ahead and translate all your resources, but using kind of like the Bing translator type technology. And then you can have someone review them for correctness and completeness. And so the other thing that the toolkit provides is like is an editor. So then you can manage, quickly edit and manage these XLIF files and to translate your app. So I am going to go into a quick demo here showing localization in the multi-language toolkit. So I'm going to fire up Visual Studio. So I've got an app here, and I'm just going to run it first using the emulator. Oops. Just to prove to you that this is an English app. It's not much of an app. It doesn't really do anything, but I've got some labels and I've got an app bar, and you can see there, it doesn't really kind of do anything. Pretty boring. I didn't write it, so I'm not gonna claim it's my app. But yeah, so it's a pretty basic app, right? So think of your app where you've just hard-coded values, or you've been smart enough to say, okay, at some point I want to translate this to resources, but maybe you haven't had time to do it. So now I'm gonna stomp this, and I've installed the multilingual toolkit, and I'll show you links to that after. But once I do, under tools, there is a, where'd it go? See it here somewhere. There we go, it's right at the top. Okay, there we go, enable multilingual tool app toolkit. So before I do that, you can see that I have my resource file in here. And if I were to just open up my resource file, it's pretty straightforward. It's just a resource file. So I have the names of the different resources and then the text values that go with it. So now if I enable the multilingual toolkit, you'll notice a couple things. A lot of moving parts here, but one thing you'll notice is that it's created this XLIF file that's located here. And this XLIF file is really what allows me to do the translations, and this is done all automatically for you. So now if I open it up, what the toolkit has done is the toolkit has gone ahead and pulled in all the resources from that resource file into this XLIF file and shown it to me in the editor. So what you're looking at is in the editor, and from here I can see them all, and it shows me here the status of them, whether it's new, whether it's been translated or not, etc. That's kind of not entirely correct, so these are just kind of guidelines. So what I'm gonna go do is I'm gonna translate this automatically. So I'm just gonna sit here and go translate all, and boom, there we go. So what that's done, now I don't know why that, oh, I guess it translated already, so that's why it didn't translate that one, but we'll continue on. If that status wasn't already translated, I could reset it and have it retranslated. That's not a problem. But what you'll notice now is all this gobbledygook in here under the translation section. And basically that's because we are, the default language here is pseudo language. So I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna hit save. I'm gonna close this, and now I'm gonna rerun the app. And what we should see, if all works out well, is voila. So now we get our gobbledygook or our pseudo language in there. And you're saying, okay, well that's useless. How am I gonna, nobody can use that. But it now shows me the things that are actually hard-coded and the things that aren't. So it helps me to kind of debug from the pseudo language helps me to debug it so I can actually see where there's errors in my translation or where things are going wrong. So I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna stop that. And let's support a new language. So we're in Canada, so let's think of French. So I'm gonna right click on the project and I'm gonna say add translation language. And what that's going to do, it's going to pop up a box. It's going to give me the option of picking all the languages. Now, remember back to what I said, how, you know, don't kill yourself supporting all your languages. I mean, you can see the list of languages here. Sudo is already supported, and that's the active one. I'm going to go ahead and find French. And I'm going to set it to French Canada. And I am going to click OK. And magically, what you'll see is a new XLF file is created. So I'm going to open that up. Takes a second to think about it. And by default, nothing's translated. So everything's back to kind of the default that it was in the resource file. And that's obvious, because now I can say, you know, export this. In fact, before I go into it, let me close that. I can right click on it and say generate the machine translations right from here. So I don't even have to go into the XLIF file to generate those automatic translations. I can then send for translation. So if I click that, it would then ask me to save it, and then I can fire it out by email. And once I get it back, I can actually say import the translations and take the XLIF file that's been translated and put it back in my thing, and automatically I've got my translation. So it's very powerful. So I'm just going to go ahead and generate the machine translations. And it's doing it. There we go. Now, let's go back in just to prove that it worked. And there we go. And you can see kind of the translations, except for that one, those ones that have been translated already. You can see the translations there. So I'm going to, I don't need to save it. So what I'm going to do is I am going to I'm going to start the app. And I am actually going to hit the start button. And I'm going to go into settings. And let's go into region. Where are we? Language. So I'm gonna add a language here, and I'm going to add French. Okay. It's hard to scroll with the mouse. There we go. Ah, we have to install it. Okay. So that's not gonna work. Okay, so when I restart the emulator, it's forcing me to install it. So let me just restart it and let's see if that works. So we got French there. Okay, if this takes more than a few seconds, I will just move on. Okay, I think this is going to take too long to restart. So, oh, wait, we have something. Yeah, that's nice. Okay. There we go. Okay, so I'm just going to restart the app now. And we should be in French mode. There we go. So, quick and simple. That took me, I mean, aside from having to restart, but I mean, you could see how powerful the toolkit is. Now, that said, one thing to note is that these machine translations aren't always 100% accurate. Usually they're far from it. So as a best practice, even if you're using machine translations, it's always a good idea to have someone to review it. But it's really quick and easy to open your app up to multiple languages and regions. So I'm just going to flip back to the slide here. Oops. There we go. Okay, so now I want to talk a little bit about, so we've talked about how to monetize your app and make money in your app using the three different models. We've talked a bit about okay, so I want to monetize my app, but I want to monetize it and open it up to a whole different set of users around the world. So we talked a bit about localization. Now let's talk about reviews, and I'll talk about a couple things in it. One is the importance of reviews in the promotion of your product. Why you want to do it. Some appropriate behavior around driving reviews, because you don't want to make users angry, and you don't want to have a bad experience for them in your app by pushing them too much for reviews. And then how to kind of add the request for, I know that in the chat previously somebody mentioned, you know, they didn't get enough reviews in their apps and they've had several downloads. So I'll show you a quick example on how to ask users gently for reviews. So reviews are important because reviews are the window to the world on your app. If somebody sees an app that's reviewed poorly, they're not likely to be downloaded. I know myself, I look at the reviews of apps all the time, and it really influences whether or not I'm going to download the app or not. And the thing is, most users don't tend to actively review applications. You will, especially good reviews, you'll get a lot of bad reviews, and we'll talk a little bit about that in the next section around, you know, why it's important to have a feedback funnel of issues for issues that users are experiencing, because what you don't want is negative reviews, because they're there. But the one thing is, users are happy to give good reviews if they are happy with the app and you remind them on a regular basis. Not on a regular basis, but you remind them gently to review the app. So what's some appropriate app behavior? So it's vital that to stress that if you get this wrong, you can alienate your users. So what you don't want to do is you don't want to browbeat users into giving a good review. You don't want to constantly remind them, hey, review my app. Ask them once only, and if they don't want to do it, then don't push them. The other thing is, make sure that the users use the app a few times first before actually asking them. If you're asking them the minute they've opened the app the first time, that's annoying. And you might get a review, but you might get, I've seen several reviews in the store, negative reviews stating that, hey, app always asks me for reviews, please stop this. It does get annoying. Especially if you paid for the app. And the best way to implement this is to use a number, like a counter that you can use in the phone's isolated storage. And I'll show you a quick demo of that now. So I'm going to flip out to Visual Studio once again. Let's stop this. And I am going to open up. Where are we? Okay, so I'm just going to run this. And it'll probably be in French. Okay. Now it's installing. There we go. So I've hit a breakpoint here, and this is a breakpoint I put in there. And a couple things. So we're in the application launching event, and you'll notice a couple things. I've stopped here, but if we go up here, basically what I'm doing is adding a couple things into the isolated storage. One is a flag called ask for review that's either true or false, so I've set that to false initially. And one is a count called started. And what I'm doing is every time the app opens, I increment that count and I store it in storage. So right now I'm checking if started equals 2. So what I want to do is I want the user to be able to start the app Run it once, and then the second time, ask them for a review. So I'm going to just hit F5 to run. So I'm going to pass through it. So right now, it's just going to step over, right? Because we've only run it once, because started is 0 right now, right? So I'm incrementing it, and then I'm actually going to start store it back into the isolated storage. I'm going to hit F5. And then now what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to get that ask for review flag from isolated storage. And if that's set to true because I've started it the X number of times, then I'm actually going to pop up a little pop-up and ask for a review. But right now it's just going to step over because it's the first time I've run the app. So you'll notice it's just a page, really compelling app, obviously not translated. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back out and pretend I'm doing something else on the phone. And I am going to scroll down and I'm going to open the app again. So now what's going to happen is once I hit that breakpoint, now you'll see I'm in there. So now what I'm saying is I'm setting that flag in the isolated storage to true. I'm going to continue on. Now in the on navigated to for the first page, again, is it set? If it is, then take me into this function, into this code block, and then pop up the review. Pop up the request for review. And this is basically just a dialog box that pops up, and all it does is runs a new marketplace review task, right? So I'll hit F5, and there we go. Would I like to review it? Yes. Now, I'm running on the emulator, so it's actually gonna die when I try to do that because I can't actually get to the store. But that's exactly what happens. So with a few lines of code and some isolated storage, storing the counters in isolated storage, it's a really powerful way of getting the users to review your app gently. But again, just to recap, make sure you're only doing it once, and make sure you're not doing it the first time they run the app. Let them use the app. Let them get used to it. Let them see what your app's all about, and then review it. All right. So I'm going to flip back to the deck. Okay. So a couple cool things, actually. That activation counter in isolated storage can actually be used for other things as well. So similar to kind of trial mode and that, you could use it to disable elements of your app. It says number of users. It's supposed to say number of uses there. So let's say they've used it 4 times and you want to disable something after the 4 times usage, you could actually store that counter in isolated storage and then disable it, sections of your app. But one thing to keep in mind with both the rating, anytime you're storing anything in isolated storage, once the app is removed and then reloaded, that gets all reset. So it's a good method to use, but you don't want to use it for anything that really needs to be secure because it can be easily circumvented. Most people won't, but if somebody wants to get around it, they could. So if you have to secure something, you find other methods. But again, I can't stress enough, behave in a way that does not upset the user. The irony is if you push them too much for the review, you may not get to the review. You may not get the review you want in the actual store. So, okay. So we've talked about reviews and how they're important to the app. We've talked about monetization. We've talked about localization. I want to talk a little bit about now how to respond to users' issues. You really want to separate a fault report from a review. If it's not easy for a user to report the issue, they'll use the review button, and as the slide says, this is disastrous. Once it's a bad review in the store, it's a negative image beside your app. It's one less person that's not going to download your app because they see a negative review or because it gets less stars. So your app should clearly define a means by which errors can be reported. So you want to make sure that the users are aware of it the first time, maybe even the first time you use your application. You could even use a startup screen which appears the first time to say, "Hey, thanks for using my app. If you find an issue with my app, please report it using this method." And it's actually quite simple to do. So it can be 5 lines of code to send an email that's a template of that helps the user enter the information. And the whole point is you want to get the users on your side. So here's an email compose task. Again, 5 lines of code, easy to implement, allows the user to enter what their fault report is and communicate with you in that regards and hopefully avoid a negative review. So why do you want to do this? Because again, an app is more than just the app. A program, the first line says a program can be made or broken by its users, right? You could have the best app in the world, but if you're not responding to your users, then they're going to rate it poorly or the potentially rate it poorly. And you'll get less downloads as a result. The other reason you should do it is people want to feel involved with your application. Not just with fault reports, but it's getting users on your side even before you've released the application. So I think Mickey in his previous session mentioned the trial capabilities in the phone store. And that's a great way about getting people on your side, getting people involved. Everyone wants to feel involved in the app. Everyone wants to feel important and stuff. And the more you can make your users feel important and feel like they're inputting into the app, the better community and the better vibrant community you're going to have. And it'll make a huge difference, not only from them adopting it, but also the word of mouth you get from people who are excited to use your app. So that brings me to a couple things, right? So getting people involved. How do I create a buzz around my application? How do I market my application and create that story? So we'll talk about a couple things quickly. Why it's important. Why do you want a buzz around your application? It sounds self-explanatory, but I don't know. I mean, why would I want to create a buzz? My app should stand alone. How to create a buzz around your application or game. Like what are some simple steps that you can do as developers to do that? And how do I incorporate that into the story and make sure that people are following me? So no matter how good your app, if it's not marketed correctly, it won't make profit. So there's a few tips, and this is basically marketing 101. So none of this is rocket science or should be new, but you'd be surprised how many people don't spend the time to think about these things. And first and foremost, create a high quality app. Spend the time making the graphics beautiful, the sounds and the music engaging. Make it simple to use. Make sure you do your unit testing, as Mickey was showing you, and you have your telemetry data and all that stuff so it's rock solid and that there's no crashes. Again, it's self-explanatory, but the more time you spend doing this, the better your app is, the higher quality, the happier users are going to be. And of course, localization. We talked about how to localize your app. It's easy. So when you make it usable by a wide range of users from a localization perspective, then you're creating that high quality app and getting them engaged. And usable by a wide range of users doesn't just mean from a locale or language base, but also means if you take the time to do things like supporting bl the blind and using like high contrast themes and those kind of things to support the vision impaired. That opens it up to a whole host of users and happy users because you've done that. Obviously, publish on all markets. So publish on the markets that you can. We support a lot of markets, and there's no reason why you shouldn't promote it across the world if you can and make more money as a result of that. The one thing though to keep in mind is when you do publish it to multiple markets, a lot of countries have different rules. For instance, some countries have different rules on what constitutes adult content, Whereas somebody in a bathing suit in some countries might be considered adult content, whereas here it might not be. So you just have to be cognizant of that when you publish your app to make sure the content matches the market you're the markets. And then the other thing is certain markets, especially in the game scenario, some markets require you to have game ratings and others don't. So you have to keep that in mind when you're publishing to different markets. And of course, promote your app. Social media is so readily available right now. Twitter, Facebook, but even things like buying ad space on sites, using things like graphical badges for your app to really promote your app in circles around like that are available to you. And maintain a relationship with the user. So one way we talked about it is fault reports. That's a relationship with the user. Regular betas, as you update the app before the new version's released, maybe do a beta to keep your users, your prime users involved with the app. Do things like achievements and daily deals to keep them engaged and coming back. And especially one of the things that differentiates our platform is things like live tiles and notifications. By using live tiles, you can show information to users that's really important to them and then draw them in. It's kind of like I love when the UPS guy comes to my door with a nice shiny package and I get all excited because it's something new. Users feel that way too when they open up and they see the app and there's some new exciting information. It gets them in your app. And if you're monetizing by ads, once they're in the app, you get more ad impressions or you get them to buy in-app purchases and those kind of things. So it's great for the user and it's great for you as somebody who's trying to monetize your app. And of course, don't be afraid to cross-promote your apps. If you got two apps in the store, promote them in each other. Maybe it's an ad space, maybe it's a deal if you bought one, get the other cheaper, that kind of thing. Or cross-promote it from if you have a Windows 8 app in the store and you want to cross-promote the phone version. Absolutely, do that. So the point is, a successful app's not just about good code. Obviously, good code helps a lot, but it's really around creating a buzz around your app. So if the time you start creating that buzz is the point after you've submitted the app to the store, you've kind of already missed the boat. There's people love good stories right about now. We'll talk a bit about stories in the next slide, but you really want to create a backstory. Why are you doing this? What's your release strategy? Gain an army of followers ahead of time as you're building the apps. Plan a reveal, blog it, use social media, involve the users. Again, the trial, the public beta is something that no other platform has, and it's really easy to do. So take advantage of it and get people excited. Get those people working for you as if they were somebody in your company promoting your app by word of mouth and downloading and using your app. And make sure you release it early. Give people an early release, whether it's via beta or get it out on time, and then update it often. Again, it's the UPS scenario. That new package every day, there's an update. It not only gives users new functionality, which they love, but it also shows that you're dedicated to your app and that you're dedicated to your users. So finally, make a story. So when we talk about story, what is that? It's just like kind of if you're looking for a job and everyone tells you to network, tell everybody about what you're doing. When you're in circles, when you're in user groups, when you're talking to people, tell them what you're doing and have that angle. Why are you doing it? Why there's a problem you're solving with your app. Why are you solving that problem? What's the story around it? How are you going to make people's lives better? Or how you not every app is saving the world and making people's lives better, but how are you going to make people enjoy themselves with your game or be more informed with your information-based app? But have that angle. Writers and bloggers and people are always looking for that awesome story to wrap their heads around and to talk about. So give people a hook around that. And I have a couple examples there. One is Man Creates Bone-Bearing Game. It's kind of boring. Man creates bone-bearing game and then gets his dog to play it. Now that's a little more interesting. There's a story, there's an angle to it. Now that's a little far-fetched. But the point is talk about why you're doing it and talk about the advantage of it and create that story. and create an ongoing narrative. So if anybody watches Game of Thrones, you know that feeling that at the end of the episode, every episode where you're like, ah, like, no, why did it have to end when the credits roll? I want to know more. Make that part of your story. Whether it's because new features are being added to your app or because you're adding a whole new set of users. Let's say you're working on localization to a specific country and you create a buzz and make a story about releasing to that specific country. Do that. Toot your horn and make use of all the resources that you have available to you. So finally, get some followers. You know, obviously, in the previous slide, we talked about creating a buzz and that will naturally get followers to you. But there are ways you can do that. So if your app is solving a specific problem, so it's not just about the app itself. It's find out where potential users of your solution hang out. If I have an app that's talks about, I don't know, radio-controlled models, whatever, maybe go hang out at an RC club and become that expert. Become the expert not just in your app, but in the problem and the problems that your users face daily. Become the go-to guy. And again, it's not just about physical hangout, but maybe even on social networks and those kind of things. Make sure you're there. Become part of that scenery. Answer questions. Build a following. You know, if you go on WP Central and you see apps like reviews of apps posted, oftentimes you'll see the actual authors of those apps respond to user comments in the forums. That's a great way to build the following because people love it when they see that you're dedicated to the app. They like the experience and they know they have some sort of channel into you because they talk to you or they converse with you through social networks. It makes them feel good about whether if you charge them for the app or the in-app purchases or any way you monetize it. It makes them feel good about their purchase. Obviously, fairly self-explanatory. Use things like email lists, Twitter feeds, and networking that works in your chosen field. And then, you know, the advantage is you also get not only a lot of users using your app, but like I mentioned in one of the previous slides, it's almost like you gain a following, it's almost like you're gaining employees in your company because you're getting feedback from this disparate group of people that really want you to build better features and to improve your app. So you're getting constant feedback to allow you to improve your app. Okay, so what's next? So here's a slide of some resources. Let me just show you the full slide there so you can see it properly. So here's some information on marketing apps, as well as how to use the in-app purchase technology for Windows Phone. We have some tips on Windows Phone Store merchant from the Windows Phone Store merchandising team. There we go. Localization, I kind of showed you quickly on how to use the toolkit, but here's some information, overall information on how to localize your app. Here's how to grab the multilingual toolkit. Definitely grab that. There's no reason why you should not be able to localize your apps. Obviously, a link to the Dev Center. That's pretty self-explanatory. Hopefully, you guys know that already. And the Pub Center. So we talked a bit about the Microsoft ads. And that's where you actually sign up to set up your ads and have your ads display in your apps. You can grab some Windows Phone Store badges to promote on your website, stuff there. And then finally, the Dev Center app is an app that allows you to monitor reviews and downloads and everything of your app on your phone. So it's a bit of a paradox. So just to kind of recap, what did we talk about? We talked about monetization options. We talked about the three options that you have for monetization, right? Paid apps, in-app purchases, as well as ad, and the pros and cons of each. There's one takeaway that I love you guys to take away is that there's no right or wrong around it. There's no one that's absolutely better than the other. Really think about who your audience is and what your app is trying to do to pick the right one. Localization, we talked about how to broaden the reach and the uptake of your app across different languages and locales. Again, and I showed you how easy it is to do it with something like the multilingual toolkit. So no reason why you shouldn't be able to do that quickly and easily and really open your app up to different markets. Then we talked a bit about the importance of reviews and how reviews can really make or break an app. So how it's really important to make sure you gently, very gently, nudge users to give you reviews, and do things that will make them, and make sure your app is polished so that reviews are generally good. And then we talked a bit about dealing with user issues, because reviews are not the place you want a user to post a complaint. You want to give them a clean avenue and a simple avenue to report issues. And I even showed in 5 lines of code how we can do an email task to have them send it. And above and beyond the technology, it's important to open a dialogue with your users so you're responding to issues. Even if issues can't be resolved right away and there's crashes, the fact that a developer listens and responds and keeps people updated is usually good enough to avoid negative reviews, and in fact probably will grow your user base, because word of mouth gets around that you're actually dedicated and you care about your users. And finally, creating a buzz for your application. This is kind of the place where the average developer is a bit out of their element. It's not something that us as developers think of, the marketing stuff on a day-to-day. But again, one thing to take away from this, start the buzz in your marketing before the first line of code is written on your keyboard. Think about who your users are. Think about where they hang out. Think about how you can gain these followers. And start incorporating that and creating a story around your app. Because by the time you've actually built your app, it's not that it's too late. It's just it's really hard to get to make up for all that lost time. The more buzz, the more story you can create around it from the beginning, the more users will grab your app, the more money you'll make and be able to monetize it. So that's really all I had. So that's it. Well, I want to thank everybody, and I hope this was useful. So, you know, get out and build an app and make sure you monetize it.